Welcome to Cinephile Episode 7, The Podcrastinator. I'll be back. Really, I will. Let's start with some music. Here's Magnitude artist Brad Sucks with Making Me Nervous. You didn't ever expect to find me quoting Arnold, did you? First, let me start by thanking everyone who wrote in the last couple of months, either to check on how things were going or to wonder if I'd disappeared off the face of the earth. In particular, I'd like to thank Sylvain Grandmaison of the Québec en Balado Diffusion podcast, who wrote to ask if I was pod-fading, which inspired the title of this episode when I wrote back and said, no, I'm just podcrastinating. And also Bruce Murray of the Zedcast, both of them wrote very kind and encouraging notes. And they're two podcasters I particularly admire and enjoy listening to. And it was just so nice to hear from them. When I last did the podcast, I fully intended to keep going, to not take a break until I had at least 10 in the can, and I had most of them plotted out. I knew where things were going to go. What I didn't count on was the upheaval and total sense of disorder that ensued after the tech guy lost his job in August. We'd been through this before, and I figured that everything would just go on as it had been, and it was only a matter of time before he was hired somewhere else. But I found myself without my usual routines, and, you know, without the ability to think very clearly or for very long on any one thing, and given to panic attacks, which have only increased in intensity and frequency as time has gone on. I'm not lacking for ideas or inspiration, oddly enough. In fact, I came up for a really nice idea for a knitting podcast during this time. But I am lacking in motivation, that's for certain. and trying to juggle two people on one computer hasn't helped, nor has the fact that I only work well when things are quiet and there's no one else around to distract me. Also, I just didn't feel like watching movies. This threw me for a bit of a loop, because you'd think that this would be the perfect time to escape for a couple of hours from, you know, everything. But I just found myself unable to concentrate on movies, so instead I've been watching television, mostly Italian television that I get via satellite from Rai International. Rai is sort of would be the Italian equivalent of the CBC, sort of a national broadcaster, and there's Rai Uno, Rai Due, Rai Tre. I think there are only the three, but they also do Rai International, where they put together kind of a hodgepodge of, I don't want to say the best of, but a hodgepodge of programming off the three channels. So I've been watching mostly Italian television, and if I'm honest, mostly bad Italian television. This one isn't quite so bad, La Prova del Cuoco. It's the Italian version of Ready, Steady, Cook, except they take the idea and they've expanded it into an hour and a half daily, except for Sundays, Monday to Saturday. There's food news and views, and then there's the final cook-off segment. And it's all hosted by the effervescent Antonella Clerici, who I adore. But there is also Ballando con le Stelle, the Italian version of Dancing with the Stars. We went downhill pretty quickly there, where, you know, stars is kind of a relative term. Most of the stars in this case are former Miss Italia candidates or hosts of shows produced for Rai Television or actors in Rai-produced series, and not always the top hosts or the top actors, usually the extras or the bit part people. Actually, this does give me a little bit of film connection here, because this time around they have it. I don't know how the other language versions work. I know they exist, but they have a jury that assigns marks, and one of the members of the jury this time around is film director Lina Wertmüller, which was it's kind of funny to see. Was she the first woman to ever win a directing Oscar? She's rather amusing, Lina Wertmüller. I'm hooked on Ballando con le Stelle. This is the third round that I've watched, and the day the catty Eva Grimaldi was finally tossed off, I cheered. I'm a small person indeed. And then there's Affari Tuoi, which is the Italian version of Deal or No Deal. I've been a fan of this for a long time. When we used to live in Europe and have occasional access to Rai programming, I fell in love with the game that was first host was Paolo Bonolis, and he left. And since then, they've been through four hosts. The second was Pupo, who's an Italian singer, best known for writing several Sanremo Song Contest winners, who I also adore, but the ratings were good enough, and he left, and they brought in my chouchou, Antonella Clerici, who, I'm sorry to say, was dreadful at hosting the game show. So then there was this search, and they turned up the latest host, who is Italian actor Flavio Insinna, and he's just breathed new life into the game. He quotes Oscar Wilde and Shakespeare and Victor Hugo, and he's warm and he's charming and he makes the game a lot of fun. But, you know, I haven't really been watching any movies. The tech guy actually came up with a good suggestion for a podcast. He thought it might be a good idea to finally take a look at the Costa Gavras film Le Couperet, which is based on a book by Donald Westlake called The Axe, which, as you might guess, is about this whole situation of someone being let go from their job. I'd read it before, but I got it out of the library and reread it, and I was just so utterly devastated by what Westlake wrote that it was actually painful to think about podcasting about the experience. I will do it, but I'm just not ready to do that yet. And then, when Isabelle Mergault's film Je vous trouve très beau was set to open in Quebec a few weeks back, I thought, oh, what the heck, maybe I'll talk about that, something to feel good about. It was actually one of the last DVDs I bought before the tech guy lost his job, and I'd been looking forward to watching it and to talking about it. But I just couldn't seem to get to it. And then last week, I was, true to form, tuned into Rye International last Thursday night. I'd already watched the French evening news and decided to watch the late night Italian news, which is how I heard about the death of Philippe Noiret. Here's the thing about me. I'm fairly unsentimental about people I don't know. I don't tend to read the people press. I don't care what most of these people are up to in their private lives. There's a pretty well-defined line, I think, between my real world and the world of the famous. But when I heard that Philippe Noiret died, I did two things. First, I tried to convince myself that my Italian wasn't good enough, that I'd misheard. Now, my grasp of the Italian language is not perfect, particularly as much of it has been relearned watching, you know, very bad reality-type TV shows and game shows. But in any case, I can assure you it was pure denial that moved me to come to this conclusion, for my Italian is certainly good enough to understand the concept of someone passing away. But I thought, no, I must have misheard, so I fired up the modem and surfed over to the website for France 2 Television. At which point the second thing happened. I burst into tears. This rather surprised me, as I'm, you know, as I said, I'm not given to crying over celebrities, but it just goes to show, I think, how highly I thought of Philippe Noiret and how much his work and himself as a person touched me. I'm planning out an episode to talk about several of Noiret's films that I particularly love, but I know that I'm still procrastinating and decided that I needed to do this to get all the other stuff out of my system, to provide a little bit of a clean slate so I can get a move on. So just a small homage to a great man and a great actor today. One of the pleasures of having lived in France is that I got to see Noiret interviewed on television many times, the types of things that don't tend to make it to North American audiences. He always struck me as warm and funny, elegant, upstanding. And that voice... You aren't struck by it as much in earlier films, because I think it was a voice, and his was a personality that grew better with age. And I think it's a great pity that the two films that North American audiences will most remember him for, Il Postino and Cinema Paradiso, are Italian films in which his voice was dubbed. I also had the great, great privilege and pleasure of seeing Noiret on stage in Paris once. The play was Le Mot Hasard, written by the wonderful Yasmina Reza, who wrote Art, which I know was a great success in both London and New York, as well as in Paris. As an aside, what did he call her? Noiret called Yasmina Reza sa fée malicieuse. And I have no idea how to translate that into English, because I want to say malicious sorceress, but it doesn't... Hi there, it's Future Catherine here. I always wanted to do that, and I've had my chance. Unfortunately, it's because I was being kind of an idiot when I was rambling on about Philippe Noiret calling Yasmina Reza. I said he called her a fée malicieuse or a malicieuse fée, and it wasn't that at all, which is why my brain got confused trying to translate it, because in English, I had implanted what it actually was in French, which is a malicieuse sorcière, a malicious sorceress or witch. And in the sense of malicious, in the sense of not being, not in the sense of being bad, which I think is the more English way of things, but malicious in the sense that, you know, of amusing oneself and laughing at the expense of others, because Reza does manage to find those little human foibles and, you know, poke a stick in them just to see what will happen. Anyway, so that, I hope, clears that up, and I'll just, you know, buzz off now and we'll get back to the podcast. But I just find, you know, that just, it's so perfect, because that's exactly what she is. Her writing is sharp and pointed and funny and pokes at things. Anyway, the L'Amour Hasard I saw in Paris starred Noiré, and the wonderful, wonderful stage actress Catherine Rich, who has another great voice. And if Noiré in film was magic, Noiré on stage was purely divine. Stage is where he got his start, and stage is where he ended his career, performing last year with Anouk Aimée in a French version of Love Letters. And I would have given my eye teeth to have seen that. As an homage to Noiré, France Television showed one of his films Sunday evening, Le Vieux Fusil, The Old Rifle, the film for which he won the first of his two César Awards for Best Actor. I have to confess, Le Vieux Fusil is not one of my favorite films, but I sat down to watch it and tape it. By the way, it's not one I currently own, and it's rather in high demand. I was checking it out on Amazon recently, and the used DVDs are going for, you know, minimum 100, 150, 200 euros. So it's one that people are looking for. But it's, yeah, I don't own it, but it's one that I should own at some point. The reason it's not a favorite is I'm not really a fan of flashback, and flashback is really important in the film, and it's one of the things that motivates Noiré's character. It was also a film made in 1975, and it has that feeling of many films made in the 70s, and I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's something kind of low-budgety feeling about the music and the credits. The music, I think, won a César as well. I think it was Noiré for Best Actor. The music won a César, and it was Best Film. But given all that, Noiré is absolutely... I'm sorry, I'm going to have to take a drink. You can tell I got another cold. I think I spend most of the winter with a cold. Sorry about that. Noiré, as I said, is absolutely brilliant. I suppose I should issue a spoiler alert here, because, as usual, I'm going to give it all away, but you should try to see it anyway if you get a chance, because, honestly, it just blows one away. Noiré plays Julien Dandieu, a surgeon in a hospital in Montauban. The year is 1944. The Germans are invading, and in order to keep his wife Clara, played by Romy Schneider, and his daughter Florence safe, he sends them to a small village in the countryside where he has a chateau. A week after he sends them away, he decides that he misses them so much that he takes a little time to go visit them. On arrival in the village, he makes the horrific discovery that a division of Germans has already preceded him and has massacred all the villagers, as well as his wife and daughter. It's vaguely based on a true story. What happens next is really what reveals the brilliance of Noiré's acting. We see him transformed by grief and shock from this gentle, caring, life-affirming saver of lives to someone who decides that he must avenge this terrible act. The chateau and the village are a virtual rabbit warren of secret passageways that he knows, you know, well, because he's you know, been there since he grew up there. He was a child there. And Dandieu arms himself with an old hunting rifle that he knows is put safely away in order to eliminate each of the members of the Nazi patrol, one by one. To give you, by the way, it's a very, very violent film, and that was one of the criticisms leveled against it. And it seems a little stunning to hear that in this day and age when we become kind of inured to a lot of violence. But I was, I found it hard to watch Sunday night. It really is quite harrowing. And I think probably one of the reasons is we put ourselves into the place of Noiré's character. What would we do? What would push us to this extreme? And that, I think, makes us uncomfortable on top of everything. To give you another idea of how stunning Noiré's performance is in this film, I mentioned that he won the Best Actor César for this role, but what I also found out in doing a little digging was that he won the Davide Donatello Award, which is an Italian film award in the category of Best Foreign Actor. And his competition that year included Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which I think is probably my favorite Nicholson film of all time. Stiff competition, though, that. I've heard a rumor that there's going to be a restored version of Le Vieux Fusil reissued next year, I'm hoping, because the prices on Amazon are absolutely staggering. Universe willing, we'll be back on our feet by then, and I'll be able to add it to my collection. Well, there we are. Podcrastinator no longer, I think, I hope. Life is still very much up in the air around here, but I feel a little better for having got some of this out of my system. If you would like to leave a comment or ask a question or just send me a nice note, you can find all the information on how to do that at www.cinefolle.org. You can leave a contribution in the comments to any episode or look over in the sidebar. Find my email address, and I also have a link to Odeo, which I know that some people are removing their Odeo links because they're you know, dusty and unused, but there we are. You can use it to leave me an audio message of up to 3 minutes in length. And next time, maybe more Noiré, maybe I'll get to that next time. It probably would be a good idea. Maybe that Isabelle Margot film finally. Or maybe I'll be able to face the unemployment demons and talk about Le Couperet. I'll be back. Probably. No, I'll be back. To close, here's Magnitude artist Curandero with Segway. Ciao for now.
Thank you.